man, here we go again. Up early, feed the dog, out the door, traffic, at the office, boss in some kind of mood today, no time for lunch, annoying coworker, no time to relax, bedtime. Then we gotta do it all again? No way. Because the best way to break up the mundane every day is to play at Wild Rose Casino and Resort. Slots, tables, sports, and a whole lot of perks when you join and play with your club wild card. So, let's play Wild Rose Casino and Resort, Clinton.
Hi, I'm Jim Street, owner of Streets Maintenance. As a licensed, insured, and bonded master plumber, I specialize in all plumbing repairs, including but not limited to water heater and sump pumps to toilet and faucet repairs and replacements. For more information about my business, I'm online at streetsmaintenance.com and Facebook, or give me a call at 400-4483.
Hello there, and welcome to the Hawkeye Hotspot podcast here on hawkfanatic.com. It is Thursday morning, April the 18th, about 9:10 a.m. Central Time. I am Rob Howe. That is Scott Docterman. If you're watching us on YouTube, if not, and you're on the podcast, he is the other voice opposite of mine, Scott from The Athletic. And as always, plenty to talk about. We thought we would dig more into spring football today, but not before getting to more Iowa basketball on the men's and women's side. Scott is a little under the weather, so you will hear that today. He has what I had before. I did not give it to him because even though we see each other at press conferences, we rarely get to talk. This is the time where we get to catch up. So how are you doing, Scott?
I'm not bad. I'm doing all right. You know, it's just, I think it's a cumulative effect of a lot of work, and somehow I caught something somewhere, and, you know, hopefully try to avoid anything. I'm, you know, what I'm going to do when I leave here is, you know, now that I got this cool Barry White voice, I'm going to start singing and record it and, you know, have my best hits album coming out.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt to have a side hustle, man. And if, you know, if you want to do a Barry White impersonation, I'm sure they'll have you. Maybe at the Englert. You can do the Englert. Scott Docterman sings Barry White.
I can introduce Tim Lester today. Can't wait to get enough of your love, baby.
Yes, coordinators available later this afternoon.
Yeah.
That'll be Tim Lester, his second opportunity to speak with local media and through the local media to you fans. And then Phil Parker and LeVar Woods as well will give updates on what they've seen this spring. And we'll talk a little bit about that next week. And we also have the open practice this Saturday, which we'll talk about more on this podcast that we'll review next week too, kind of get a rare glimpse of when we get to see Iowa football. We usually overreact, but that's kind of the dynamic of it. You get so few opportunities that you want to react when you can react, and sometimes we overreact.
That is always the case. And you know, it's kind of funny, it's kind of sad. I remember Morehouse and I would, you know, we would overanalyze that open practice to the nth degree. We would sit together, and even Halas couldn't stand to sit next to us because we'd be speaking in tongues, you know, just because we're trying to figure out the formation, you know, the personnel grouping, what they were doing, you know, how many yards they gained and all this stuff. And then ultimately I'd always said, you know, I'm like, this is one practice out of 15 and they're not doing as much today as they probably did the day before. So, you know, you take it, you know, in stride, you try to explain it, but then it's like, yeah, this, you know, a lot of times you'd have one guy that just rises to the top and you're like, oh, look at this guy. And then you're like, yeah, but this was his best practice by far. Or you'd have somebody who had two fumbles or something and you're like, eh. And then the other part is, Robin, we'll definitely get this, is guys that sit out, you know, they're just, they're tapped out. They were not going to risk anything. And then, and so you don't get a chance to see them. And then people are like, well, where's so-and-so? Well, he had a hangnail today and they decided to hold him out.
Yeah, we even saw that last week when we got a little bit of a early bit of practice over at the practice facility last week. There were quite a few guys sidelined for, and mostly veterans. Yeah. That's kind of like you see them. I did see Alex Mota was on a scooter type thing too, which isn't good. And we'll get to this as well. When you lose a receiver to the transfer portal and another one's out for spring, who's a young guy you're trying to develop, those are the type of things that I don't think we overreact to, But I think you need to react to things like that. And that's kind of where I try to steer my energy on Saturday. I try to videotape as much as I can. So that way I can go back and look and say, this is something or this is nothing.
Yeah. And, you know, the sad part is, and I know we'll get more into this later, but there's no way to really react to the quarterback this year without Cade McNamara there. At least last year we had different guys. You know, we didn't know about Deacon Hill, Joe Labus. You know, we only saw him in the bowl game, so then we had an opportunity to kind of watch him and work. But this year, Cade is not. He's clearly number one out of the group that's on campus, and he can't. You know, he's coming off an ACL, so maybe we'll watch him throw some passes, but he won't even be in 7-on-7. And Deacon Hill, if you know, I want to try to be kind here, but if we see Deacon Hill in the fall playing a lot, there's going to be a rebellion, you know, and I kind of think that, you know, that I don't know that Iowa might be going after somebody else in the portal once the portal starts to open. I mean, to get another quarterback in, because I just don't think you can have that situation.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing. And let's just continue on with football here, since we started here anyway. And it's just people listen to the podcast and want to fast forward through football and get to our basketball talk, because that's more of a hot topic right now. That's fine. But just in terms of, the portal being open now, and we talked about Jacob Bostic, which was an odd – that one surprised me, Scott. Not that he left – because we've seen plenty of receivers go in the transfer portal. Scott's got the figures on that from the last decade or so. But just that he met with us last week, you know, to do interviews. And I'm sure you got a chance to talk to him. I talked to him. He seemed happy. He had a relationship with Tim Lester. Tim Lester recruited him to Western Michigan. And when Jacob said the first time he saw Tim at the Iowa facility, he's like, "Hey, Coach Lester, good to see you again." You know, I mean, he had a relationship there. I don't know what it was. I haven't talked to Jacob yet, but it would seem there would have been an opportunity there. But a lot of things go into these decisions, Scott, and you just hope that it works out best for the kid and he's not making a rash decision. And his dad did play college football and has I think his dad's been an assistant coach somewhere too. I may have that off, but they have knowledge of what goes into this and the business itself. So I think Jacob's probably doing what he thinks is best for him, but leaves another void at a position where, you know, and in fairness to Jacob too, the offensive coordinator and wide receiver coach that recruited him here are now gone. So I don't know how much that played into it.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, when you have a guy like that who's been hurt for almost his entire career, he did get some rotational snaps late last year, that there's a, hey, I just need a new start. I just need to go somewhere else and do something. But it is unfortunate, as you said. I mean, when you look holistically, the attrition that Iowa has at that position is grotesque. From the 2018 through 22 classes, which is entirely Kelton Copeland, 9 out of 10 receivers recruited are gone. 8 through the transfer portal, 1 to baseball. The only one who lasted was Nico Ragaini. And then you look at, you know, over the wide area. And then you throw on guys like Charlie Jones and Oliver Martin, who came in and as scholarship transfers, and then they left.
Tyron Tracy.
He was part of that. Yeah. I mean, just the entire, I mean, it's a wasteland. 9 out of 10, and then 11 out of 12 when you count the transfers. That's just grotesque. And then, you know, from 13 to 22, a 10-year block, 24 freshman receivers. You had 15 transfers. One went to baseball. One retired. You know, if only 5 out of 24 finished as wide receivers. And frankly, it was only because of that the year before, the 17 year, when you had Amir, Brandon, and Max Cooper who stuck. And then you had Nico and Matt Vandenberg. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, and so you wonder why the passing game has struggled for the last 10, you know, plus years. And then if we want to look into the quarterback recruiting, frankly, under the Brian Ferentz era, it's been just as bad. I mean, you know, whether it's attrition through exits or just, you know, lack of success on the field. I mean, those two positions have just been a gorge. And so that's why Iowa's offense has stunk so bad. And then you throw Jacob Bostic, who was the only receiver they recruited in the 22 class.
Yep.
And now he's gone too. And now we're looking at, you know, the veterans are Seth Anderson and Caleb Brown, two transfers from last year. And then you're looking at a bunch of younger players. As you said, Alex Moda's on a walking boot and Scooter, and then younger players that, you know, somebody like Caleb Wiegen, I think he'll be a pretty good player. But again, you know, walk on, you know, you just, it's really a sad situation that they put themselves in, and it's all on themselves, frankly.
Yeah, and it's that chicken or the egg, you know. Does it take, you know, do you have to get guys in to improve things to attract more guys at those positions, or is the system broke and it doesn't matter? You're getting guys in, they see that they're not going to be utilized at their given position, and they say, psh, I'm out of here because I can play at a non-power five school that throws the ball around, and I can at least, you know, be able to enjoy my college career. And that's the hope here, right, Scott, that Tim Lester changes the narrative here, that that wide receivers are utilized, that wide receivers can put up statistics, that wide receivers can stretch the field, that wide receivers can be a bigger part of this offense than it's been for so long. And, you know, they're to the point now where you're taking a kid that enrolled last January of 23 from Texas, and Terrell Washington Jr., who was going to Purdue until the coaching change there, comes here, plays running back last year. Now they're moved him a lot. You know, he's playing a lot of slot now.
Yeah.
I think at this point, Scott, you just got to piece this thing together, try to get production out of the receiving group, and then hopefully that attracts a higher caliber, further developed receiver in the future that you can bring in.
They really squandered their best opportunity in what really happened back when they had Amir and Brandon and Nate Stanley. Yeah. And they had some success passing the ball, obviously at tight ends, but also at wide receivers
That Holiday Bowl, I was like, okay, yeah, we've got this. We're moving forward with this position. And this, you know, I felt good coming out of that. And it's been downhill ever since.
Right. And then, you know, you look at what they recruited in that class of 21, where you had Keegan Johnson and Arlen Bruce and Brody Brecht. And you thought, okay, then they've got a foundation here. And then all three within 2 years decided to bolt the program. And then you look at quarterback and, you know, Spencer is a great guy. He was certainly an upgrade over what they had last year at that position, but wasn't real good. And now you're at a complete less than zero on this stage. And so what you're going to have to hope for is that the scheme makes up for it, that younger players, somebody just over, you know, just completely jumps ahead of where you expect them to be, you know, a Caden Wiegen, for instance, or Caleb Brown just has a kick-ass season, or Seth Anderson, or one of the younger players.
And I think it's possible for that top three. I don't think that's a terrible top three.
Yeah.
If you throw Wiegen in there.
Right.
But you're going to need some depth too. And who's the outside guy out of that group? Seth?
Maybe. I mean, I would suggest that probably one of the redshirt freshmen are probably in that ballpark.
Bowie, yeah.
You know, and, you know, they're going to also have to take a chance or two with the portal, and not necessarily are they going to be able to say, go with, and this is the creativity that they're going to have to engineer, is that maybe that there's somebody who's like, let's say a sophomore at a MAC school, mm-hmm, or even an FCS program, to say, look, we don't have a scholarship this fall. Our NIL will compensate you enough to where you will be happy or be able to afford all of this. And then we'll put you on scholarship in the spring. And then you can help us elevate you know, that those are the creative type things they're going to have to do to create competition first, but then also to have results. And because, you know, it's a situation where they're going to have to hope for a Charlie Jones, mm-hmm. where, you know, the market isn't real good for somebody like that. Everybody's tapped out. And then they're just like, you know what? I just want a chance at the highest level. And Iowa gives you that chance. And then you're going to have to persuade them that, look, this is still a good opportunity for you in the future, rather than like with Charlie, which was Iowa didn't do a good enough job with him, didn't put him in enough good situations, and then ultimately lost him to, you know, where he had five times the number of catches and took his team to the Big Ten championship game. So it's a wasteland right now. And, you know, that said, and you look at the rest of the roster, you look at the defense, of course, you look at, I think offensive line is better than what we, you know, better than what it showed last year because of Tim Lester's offense. The tight ends are in fantastic shape. I think the running backs are in a really good spot. Agreed. But quarterback and receiver are really the anchor to this. I mean, an anchor.
And if you think about modern day football, Scott, when you say, oh, this team is questionable at quarterback and receiver, that's not good.
No. No.
And it's really the questions at quarterback are, you're again putting all of your, at least where we sit here today on April 18th at 9:30 a.m. Central Time, pretty much all of your eggs right now are in McNamara's basket again, and you're hoping he's comes back from another knee surgery and stays healthy and is effective in a new offense.
Exactly. There's a lot of if and hope here. Yeah. And what do we know about Cade McNamara? He is pretty accurate when he has time to throw. There's some, you know, I would say RPO. He ran some of that at Michigan, and it was very effective with him in there. But right now we can't see any of it because he can't do any of it. He's not allowed to. He'd like to, but he can't. And, you know, the disappointing thing is, and this is, whether this is, you know, a Marco thing or if this is a Lester thing, I don't know, is I think what we were all hoping for was Marco would be clearly number two at this point behind McNamara and really run a number one reps, but that hasn't been the case. And so unless they bring somebody else in the portal, I would expect that they would. I really do think that would just, I don't know that they can go, you know, you got a new offensive coordinator. He's different than the last guy, you know, for a lot of reasons. So I would expect them to do that. And maybe that would change the dynamic a little bit. But at this point, there's a lot of hope that Cade McNamara is the guy. And if he's not, that's going to be hard to stomach. And I think when you look at, if you're the defense, you know, and you're saying last year we had to shoulder the entire weight of this team. You know, I think you'd like to at least say, you know, what, instead of beating teams 10-7, wouldn't you like to beat them like 38-7?
Yeah.
You know,
even 28-7.
Yeah, right. You know, have some fun out there. And instead, so we'll see, you know, what that means. But I would be very surprised if Iowa doesn't add somebody in the portal.
So Iowa needs, I think, and I agree with Scott, I think Iowa needs another body at quarterback and receiver. Now, as Scott said, the scholarship situation makes this a little bit more tricky because you can't just say, okay, this is the guy we want. We're going to go full bore and we're going to be able to give him a scholarship like other schools that are interested in him. That's a problem right now, Scott. What do you have the count at?
I have it at 89.
Okay. So four over.
Four over.
Does that include Griffin Little's medical?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. They were at 92, 2 days before, spring practice, and then they've lost three guys, you know, Bostic, Little, and Caden Proctor. And, you know, and looking, there's a lot of guys you can kind of identify as transfer candidates after the spring, you know, once things kind of shake out, once they have their meetings, or other players that might be on medical and things like this kind of trickle out through the course of even later on, even though they might not hit the portal per se, but they can, you know, identify, well, maybe I want to go to a lower level or something like that. But, you know, you're going to have to massage those numbers and you're going to have to figure out ways. And again, you know, it could come down to some tough stuff, but otherwise we'll, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens probably on Monday and next week.
Because if you look at it, Scott, being four over gets you to the limit.
Yeah.
So you would have to shed four. And then if you wanted to just say one quarterback, one wide receiver, that's two more guys. So that gets, that's six guys you got to get to just to get to 83 to give you the two for those guys. I'm great at math.
Yeah. Yeah. Good job, man.
I didn't even need a calculator for that. But
yeah,
it's kind of where we're at now, right? Just in terms of, you know, Iowa should be proud of its retention. But the problem is people don't want to leave. You're stuck in this position.
And a lot of that is the sixth year thing.
Yeah, that's true.
That's probably the biggest factor here, that they went all out and rightly so.
Yeah,
because okay. if you get Nick Jackson and Jay Higgins and Sebastian Castro and you know, those guys to all come, and then you have the other guys like you could persuade him to stay, like Luke Lachey and Y.A. Black, and Jamari Harris could really use that year, and Quinn Schulte. When you convince all
if
of them,
if you would have gotten
back
that haul out of the portal, man, people would have been parading in the streets if they were like, look at all these guys, but they were retaining guys, so you don't get as much hype.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like, you know, out of that group, Rob, you know, next week's the NFL draft. I look at, you know, like strictly the sixth year guys or the extra year guys, I should say. You know, Jay was probably a third or fourth rounder. Sebastian Castro was probably in the same realm. Nick Jackson and Quinn Schulte were probably late round, if more priority free agent types. You know, and then there was a guy like Nick DeYoung. You know, Kyler Fisher was a guy that they decided to bring back way early, earlier than all of them. And then you look at, you know, some of, you know, like a Lachey and a Y.A. Black. I mean, I had a couple of NFL people tell me that Lachey could have been tight end two out of this, you know. And so now the question is for him, does he decide, well, I'm going to go with, you know, stick with that and risk it, or this year, you know, come back to Iowa, make some decent money through NIL, come back and then end up being have a tremendous year. Maybe he is the Mackey Award winner, and maybe next year he is first round draft pick, the next great one in the Iowa legacy. You know, so that's what he's banking on, and he might have picked the right choice.
Yeah, I think with him, he got hurt so early last year. I mean, it was early, so he was able to get the procedure out of the way and go on recovery, but it also was like scouts that were ready for him to emerge after playing the second fiddle to Sam Laporta didn't get to see that. And unfortunately for Eric All, he moves into that spot. He's thriving and then he gets hurt. So I did see Dane had Eric All being drafted though. He released his 7-round mock yesterday. What do you have him in the sixth round, fifth round?
It was sixth round. Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, I'd have to look it again, but I want to say, is this Cincinnati? I can't remember.
Yeah, I think it was Cincinnati, which is where he's from.
Yeah,
that would be nice for him.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, you know, he was trying to say at the combine that he was ready to go. I don't, that's bravado, I think, but no, he's a capable player at the next level, no question. And it was unfortunate because I think that was a kind of a dirty hit. He caught the ball high and the defender from Wisconsin decided to hit him at the knee, you know, instead of hitting him in the midsection. And I didn't like it. You know, I saw the same thing happen a couple of times at the NFL level with Kirby Joseph from the Detroit Lions, did that consecutive weeks to TJ Hockenson, and he did it to the Rams tight end in the playoffs. So I think
we have to outlaw chop blocking.
Well, yeah, chop blocking, you know, and cut blocking is even worse. Yeah, and then, you know, hits to the head, you know, that are bang bang, and you don't give it much of a target zone, so that's where they're going to go, and unfortunately, it makes things even worse.
For me on Saturday, Scott, I think it's going to be hopefully most I know Logan Jones was not in uniform during the small bit of practice we saw last week. Neither was Jennings Dunker. I would hope that we get to see some form, something close to what they expect the offensive line to be on Saturday, because that's kind of what I want to see against the defensive line. It's where my focus will be, especially without really having anything to look a great deal at quarterback. I want to see what Marco looks like, obviously, and if Deacon has made any strides. And people lay off of Deacon, man. It's not the kid's fault. I mean, he's in the position he's in, and trying to get better. And he didn't want to, play as poorly as he did last year. It's like, God, we came back from that practice last week and I had people firing away at me saying, oh no, Deacon Hill's the number one quarterback. What are they doing? Calm down. It's freaking April. Let's get to the season before you start complaining. But yeah, offensive line, defensive line for me on Saturday. And I'm not sure how much else we'll be able to extract from this thing on Saturday.
Yeah, it's going to be small details that we kind of try to get
Yeah.
to. I think to me, it's what does the offense do? What makes it different? You know,
Yeah.
is it the motions, and how does the motions impact the defense, and can they run the football based on that? And because that seems to be what Caleb Johnson's saying, that that sometimes their motions force conversations on the defense that they never had before, and when that happens, then they end up, that there's movement, and then next thing you know, that the line has a fighting chance to win, because by outlawing the base, it's basically outlawed the cut blocks, that you can't do that anymore because they watch them so closely that anything that's even if it's a perfect cut block, they'll sometimes flag it as a clip. And so that's really ruined the outside stretch for Iowa. Well, now if they have a lot of movement and motion, the way the Rams and the 49ers kind of work through it, if they can have that, it forces the defense, the second level, to think differently, to move differently. And if they can react differently, then your offensive line has a chance to get to that spot before the defense does. And if that's the case, then we'll see whether or not this offensive line can actually block, because as we know, the defense is pretty good at Iowa.
Yeah, no doubt. And we'll see how much they show us offensively. They're aware that we're out there with video cameras and things like that too, and they know that the opposition, they're going to want to bring as much element of surprise with Tim Lester's offense into the fall as they can, and want to probably give us as vanilla a look at it Saturday as they can give us. But I still think we'll be able to see some noticeable changes.
Yeah, I don't think they'll completely hide everything.
No.
They'll hide some,
Yep.
because they don't want, there's something specific they're working on. It's like, okay, today's their last practice that they're going to work on that. Saturday will be the day where, okay, we'll run some motions on this, but largely we're going to, hide this. Because yeah, they they've always told us that, and that's not going to change. Because why would you? Why would you want, it's not even really about your late season teams. It's like a team like Iowa State, that's early to get a glimpse of it, because they'll all see it before that.
Yeah, no doubt. But yeah, that's Saturday morning at Kinnick Stadium. Check out HawkeyeSports.com for all the details, where to park, when the gates open, what type of festivities they have for fans there, things like that, concession stands, what have you. But check out HawkeyeSports.com for all of that. That's this Saturday morning, April the 20th at Kinnick Stadium. We'll wrap up another spring session of football for Iowa, and then they move on to a big recruiting and camp period in May and June, and start to look into the transfer portal too. I'm sure they're in the portal already, even though they're one of the later schools. They've got a the portal's been open, so their roster management is just huge at this time of year, and I'm sure Iowa's heavily involved in that, just in terms of, okay, which guys, let's have conversations with guys and let them know, that they're, their path to playing time may not be what they want it to be, and all those conversations. So, should have some movement and news on that within the next week or so as well. So, stay tuned for that. Probably a good time for us to break before we get into some basketball. And want to let folks know that support for this podcast and all the podcasts here on Hawk Fanatic comes from Systems Unlimited, celebrating 50 years of providing services to people living with disabilities and mental health needs throughout East Central Iowa. A list of their services and upcoming events can be found at sui.org. That is sui.org. Thank you to Systems Unlimited for the support of the podcast and the great work they've been doing in our community for over 50 years. We're going to hear from a few more of our sponsors now, and Scott and I will be back on the other side to talk some Hawkeye hoops. Hang in there.
Hi, this is AJ Perez, managing partner at Deere Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram of Waukee and Iowa City. I'm so proud of our team at both locations. We are committed to one thing, giving our customers the absolute best when it comes to service and a car buying experience, the kind of experience that brings you back. What makes us different? We believe at Deere, we don't just sell cars, we help people buy them.
Do you need a great electrical contractor or fire and water restoration specialist? Well, contact Lance Bolin at LB Electric and LJ Construction in North Liberty. Lance has served the corridor for many years and is ready to help you. Call Lance Bolin at 319-640-1116. That's 319-640-1116. Or visit LJ_construction on Instagram for licensed and insured electrical work, fire and water restoration, and remodeling.
We are back to tell folks that switching is easy. We do it all the time. We switch on the lights. We switch TV channels. Some of us, like Scott, switch partners while square dancing. Well, that's a stretch. But what's not a stretch is how you can switch and save with State Farm. In fact, State Farm agent Chad Birch, right here in Iowa City, can switch you over so you can start saving today. Chad and his team are ready to welcome you to the State Farm neighborhood. With Chad Birch, it's easy to switch and save. Just give him a call when you want the real deal. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. All right, Scott, let's talk some hoops. Let's start with the transfer portal, because we've talked a lot about this on this podcast, and Iowa men's basketball, NIL in particular, and in a lot of tentacles to that this week, Saturday. Patrick McCaffrey announced that he was going to Butler Monday. Was it Monday?
Or yeah, Monday.
Monday for Tony?
Yeah, I think it was Monday. Yeah.
Tony Perkins announced he was going to Missouri. Not a surprise there. It looked like that was kind of where they were going. Then he tweeted out it was never about the money, which then created a hoop storm with Iowa fans. And I wish that would have not ended like that. It would have been nice, but I'm sure Tony has seen a lot of people ripping him apart on social media, talking about, not a big loss, faded down the end of the season, even though people don't mention that he was hurt. But just, it was not a good way for it to end, Scott. And hopefully with time, Tony can look back at his time at Iowa and not the idiots in the fan base and appreciate his time here. And I think he will.
Yeah. And it's also unfortunate that a week ago, Rob, that Fran McCaffrey brings up that, his market value was, $500,000 in the portal. And in fact, I decided, I'm going to go ahead and transcribe what he said, just so we can make sure that we're, completely, legal on the, or completely accurate, should say. And let me find it. Okay, here it is. This is what he said at the PCA, which is, as some people may not know, every month, the Presidential Committee on Athletics, it's a handpicked designated committee that reports to the president of the university about things going on in athletics. It used to be called Board of Control, but their control is no more. But all the athletic administrators are a part of it, and then they invite a coach to come and speak. Well, he was talking about the transfer portal, and as we know, Fran has always been kind of wishy-washy on the transfer portal. And then, he railed earlier in that session about the transfer portal opening up the same time as NIL, making it pay for play. I think he's the only one that's continuing to rail about that situation, because it's now just called reality. But after when he was talking specifically about his situation. He goes, okay, the season ends, and Tony Perkins, who is leaving here because he has a market value probably in the neighborhood of $500,000, we were not going to be able to pay him that. So he goes somewhere else, and we need a point guard. So that's, I think, what started a lot of the situation with with Tony and the money. Like, oh, he's just chasing the money. And I'm sure that's part of the reason why he decided to say, hey, it wasn't just about the money, and why he left. And I know he didn't get quite that much, but he did get a substantial amount. And that is, several hundred thousand dollars, So, I mean, it's really a situation where it brings to light everything we've talked about with this program, Rob, where it stands NIL wise. But, then I think the whole awards banquet throws a little more gas in that fire because it's kind of a double standard, if you will. And I think it's fair to suggest that, which is that Patrick McCaffrey, who is transferring to Butler, gets the Chris Street Award, whereas Tony Perkins, who was second team all Big Ten, doesn't get an award. I think that it's easy for people to go, well, why is that? Well, one's the coach's kid, and even if that's not the reason, even if it's because Tony says, I don't want anything, I just want to get out of here, or Patrick showed up, which makes him eligible for it, I don't know. I think overall it asks those questions and it draws those questions. And I think that's what makes the situation very difficult for the Iowa men's program going forward.
Yeah, it's just messy, Scott, because the layers kind of crash into each other, if I could say that. It's like Fran is trying to advocate for his program and let people know that their NIL is not where it needs to be for them to compete with like schools for guys in the transfer portal. That makes sense. The downside of what he did was he used Tony as the example, and then that puts, kind of almost like a stigma on Tony, that Tony, as Scott said, that Tony's chasing money. Mm-hmm. And let's not be naive. Money is definitely part of it. But also there's other factors. Obviously, what Scott talked about with the awards, that makes you wonder if what the relationship is like with Iowa and Tony. But this all, again, we hear people saying, and I saw it again yesterday, and I get it. Brad Heinrichs and the Swarm, they're trying to raise money, the Swarm Collective. So they're out there soliciting donations from fans. Then fans get pissed off because, hey, we're giving, and Scott and I, this is all territory that Scott and I have gone over. So then they're mad that, why do we have to give more to make our teams competitive when the university isn't doing anything more? And all of that stuff kind of collides, and that creates the situation like we have here with Tony and the Iowa basketball program. Is there's just no system. There is no defined system here. So everybody's left to kind of just go rogue, and Fran's going rogue, trying to get people to understand where they are in the NIL. Tony's pissed off because people think he's greedy. All of this is created by the NCAA at the front end of the NIL and the portal. And as long as we are going to continue to roll this way, we're going to see situations like this.
Yeah. And that is the big picture, unfortunate part of this. I kind of think over the last week or so that there's been some unforced errors, and that's going to be really a problem for Iowa going forward, because you're signaling to your own players and to players who might be interested that we can't afford you, or somebody's leaving for the money. And then what does that mean for them? Why should they look at you? Or if you're internal, wow, he kind of got sold down the river a little bit. And what does this mean for me if I decide to go do this or think about this? And then, you know, again, the awards thing is, I mean, it's ceremonial, but you know, the appearance that Patrick McCaffrey gets of being the Chris Street Award winner, even though he's already committed to another program, and versus a player who is decorated, who was a second team All Big Ten guy, who also committed to a program before the awards banquet, doesn't get a single award. You know, it's like, well, why is that? And is it because, you know, what are the reasons for that? Well, to me, that all kind of comes back to unforced errors. You know, is there one defining standard, or does it change? Does it change because one's the coach's son? Does it change because somebody wanted to show up? But all of this is, again, unforced errors. Now, Iowa did sign somebody out of the portal yesterday, you know, and, you know, I don't know much about him other than what I just read basically in the press release and where he's from. You know, Drew Fellwell, did I pronounce that correctly?
I believe that is how it's pronounced.
Yeah. Last year he averaged 7.1 points, 3.0 assists, or that's his career, I should say. And then, last year, I think it was, he averaged 10 points a game, 6.2 assists. So we don't know what that means. Does that mean he's going to be a backup? Is he going to be, I kind of look at him right now as like a Bakari Evelyn type, you know, kind of step in, maybe he starts, maybe he's off the bench, but that's not the type of player where you win Big Ten championships with. So again, I don't know what message. I think there's a lot of mixed messages here, and I don't know that it's healthy for a program that needs money to compete, because I just saw, you know, Illinois has been crushing it in the portal. Minnesota just grabbed the nation's fourth leading rebounder from Canisius.
Ohio State grabbed somebody yesterday, a high level transfer as well. I can't remember what his name was.
Yeah. So, you know, and in the league, people are grabbing these players, and that's your competition. And what have you done? Well, you've lost the highest decorated player. Your other one, you know, Peyton Sanford, who I kind of thought should have been Chris Street Award winner. I think he's just tremendous. You know, could go to the NBA, or he could come back, or, you know, something to that effect.
Odds are that he'll come back.
I think so.
You never know.
Right. And, you know, but are you getting better, or are you getting worse, as they say in a lot of situations like this? And I don't see them getting better right now, and everybody else is. And this team has kind of been, I thought this year was a good, well-coached year for where it was, but, you know, Owen Freeman was a terrific freshman, but you're going to face this question next year because teams are going to be, you know, trying to poach him. So I think this is there's a lot of existential type questions, I think, for this program.
Yeah, I don't think anything's been solved since last week when we talked about, you know, the instability of the NIL or just not having enough in NIL to compete with some of the teams, like level teams in your league and around the country and in the region and all that stuff. And you have to hope that Drew Fellwell can make the jump from the Ohio Valley, where he led the league in assists, as Scott said, 6.2 assists per game, you know, and point guard has been a tricky position for Fran. It's been one that's been up and down. Desante Bowen was considered the next guy, or the, you know, highly regarded recruit from New England. He comes in, spends 2 years here, injured this year, but just never didn't, you know, I think the assumption, and that's on us partly, is that highly regarded recruit, he's not going to need as much development. He come in and hit the ground running. Turned out he needed development and just wasn't able to do that in 2 years and decided to move on. That forced Tony Perkins and Josh Dixon to handling the ball more, with Brock Harding coming off the bench. So now with the backcourt of Fellwell and Harding, you have two true point guards, which is nice. Both guys with college experience, obviously Fellwell with more than Harding, but hopefully you've at least solidified that position to make it to the point where it's not a liability, which it has been at times during Fran's run. There have been times where the position just isn't good enough, and you can notice that against the competition. But Iowa now, Scott, at least by my count, at 11 scholarships, leaving two open. So obviously you'd like to add to this roster, maybe another shooter, maybe another post player. As of right now, this is what it looks like. Peyton Sanford, if he does come back, Josh Dix, Owen Freeman, Brock Harding, Laje Dembele, Price Sanford, Evan Bruns, and Riley Mulvey would be your returners as of today, Thursday, April 18th at 10 a.m. So if you're listening to this tomorrow and something has changed, I am not responsible. And then you have incoming freshman Cooper Koch and Chris Tajo, who they like a lot and I think could be factors next season. So, you know, I don't think I wouldn't be surprised if there's another addition or two, but I think we're looking at the Ohio Valley, Horizon League, maybe the Missouri Valley. If you remember Cricky, I think, what do you average, 20 points in the Valley the year before he came here? So it is a different level. So I would not, you know, just assume that Thelwell is going to come in and average 6 assists a game. There's going to be a learning curve for him. But hopefully this isn't it for the building of this roster, Scott. Hopefully they can get another player or two to address the needs.
Yeah, they definitely need at least one more in my eyes. I mean, you know, they need other than Sanford, I mean, who's like a true scorer? You know, Freeman has been pretty good in the post, and he's capable of that, and he can take another step. But you need just somebody who can fill it up when you can. And I think you look at, like, to me, if I'm trying to build a starting five, I probably would say Thelwell would probably start over Harding at this point. Dix at the two, Sanford at the three. I'd probably put Dembele at four right now, and Freeman at five. And you know, and then of course things change during the game, so it's like the minutes will be spread out. But I think, you know, I'd like to see another somebody who can get their points. You know, it'd be easy to say, I'm not going to say a Keegan Murray or Luka Garza, but maybe more like a Chris Murray, you know, or Joe Wieskamp type that can score some. And so we'll see. It's just, it's at a really precarious spot as a program. We talked about it last week. I talked to Beth Getz about it. I don't know, you know, cause there is a thriving apathy. But I think this week, with some of the unforced errors, it's just been more and more kind of a, all right, what are they going to do to address and make people excited about basketball again? And none of this has really done that.
No, I don't sense that there's any more inspiration in the fan base for Iowa men's basketball heading into the 24 and 25 season. And it's up to, as we've talked about, the basketball team and Beth and everybody else involved to figure out how to fix it, from, you know, the arena to NIL, to whatever support it needs. And again, if people want a coaching change, I get it. That sometimes we get to the apathetic part, we get to, you know, this, you know, we've gotten to a certain level of success. That's not enough. You got to keep bringing it higher and higher. The lack of Sweet 16s obviously is the, you know, the elephant in the biggest elephant in the room. I think that's what people, that's their go-to argument of why Iowa basketball isn't successful. As we've talked about, it goes well beyond that, Scott. That is not the only marker of where this program is, but you know, you got to hope that the last year's freshman class, this year's freshman class stays and develops and is retained. Because much like Iowa football, Scott, Iowa basketball is about development. For the most part, they're not getting 4- and 5-star recruits for Iowa basketball. Now with NIL, that's even going to be even harder. You got to develop. And we've seen guys that have been developed in this program that weren't highly ranked recruits. You got to keep doing that, but you cannot have attrition. We talked about that at wide receiver in football. It's you can't have that in basketball, much smaller scale, smaller roster. But you can't lose guys like DeSonte Bowen after 2 years and not develop him all the way to get to the point where you benefit from that. So that's part of the equation too. Cooper Kotch is ranked 70th, I think, on 247. That's a good recruit. That's a guy you would expect to come in and give you some good minutes. Son of former Iowa basketball player J.R. Kotch. If you've seen Cooper, I'd encourage you people to watch him. Really good, versatile, three-level scorer. Really high upside, I think, with Cooper. And Pajo's really good, too. He's a little bit more under the radar. But I think both of those guys could get in the rotation this year.
Yeah, and that's critical. And that those are things that, you know, and we've talked about this a million times, Rob, but this is what you know, the going to North Liberty every other week in the summer, you know, twice a week, you know, that was free advertising for the basketball program, because fans could go and watch and see these guys grow. We wrote stories about them. Sorry. You know, business, and they were able to, you know, you saw videos of them. And you could kind of build relationships. Even if you weren't there, you could build relationships through what we wrote, through what videos you saw and whatever, you know, the primetime league, PTL, you know. And not having that means that it's just like this summer wasteland, you know, that there's no opportunities. I mean, you know, maybe we'll get some interview sessions, but it's not the same. You know, it's never the same as being able to see them work out. I think that, I don't know if what you think of this, Rob, but I think they need to go on some sort of a barnstorming tour.
Yeah, we talked about this a little bit last week. I think that's not a bad idea. And they used to do that.
Yeah.
You know, they don't do iClubs anymore, really. I mean, they're very limited compared to what they used to do. So
right.
I think I'm with you. I think that there's a bit of a disconnect and lost connection, so to speak, same thing with the fan base.
Yeah. I think it needs to come back to let's have a workout. Let's go, you know, hey, this week, you know, and do it, say, once a week, and it could be part of their swarm payment, you know, that for showing up. And Fran absolutely needs to be there. And you take up the team, and you go to Cedar Rapids one night, you go to Des Moines another night, you know, maybe the next week, or you go to somewhere else, and
hey, you hit all quadrants of the state, right?
Sioux City, you know,
where it's a point where people can maybe drive even an hour rather than having to drive 4 or 5 hours to Iowa City. You put them in just in different spots. And I mean, you could do how many would it take, Scott? 5, 6 if you put them in different areas,
exactly. You could do it, you could spread it out over June and have, you know, one or two a week, you know, and just hey, this week we're gonna go to Des Moines. And we're going to have a workout. We're going to rent out this gym at Valley High School or something like that. And we're going to have a rally. You know, that's what we're going to do. And then you have people from the swarm there to say, hey, we need your support. We're going to have people from Iowa Athletics saying the same thing. And then you're going to have a workout and they'll, you know, show off some stuff and have it emceed. I mean, I think that's what you got to do to try to generate some interest and publicity here. Because if the women did it, it would be sold out.
Yep.
The men have to do it because they're just not getting there. And then you need stump speeches by Fran, and you know, because Fran is absolutely part of this. The coach cannot just be a figurehead and just meet in front of the media and that's it. I mean, you've got to go out and sell yourself. And
I remember how much Tom Davis hated the iClub circuit. Called it the rubber chicken circuit. But he did it. He knew the importance of those iClub meetings in Sioux City and Decorah area or wherever, because you're hitting fans from all over.
Exactly. These are the people that support you, whether that's financially or it's, you know, just vicariously through their TV and wearing Iowa shirts. But these are the people that are your fans. And this is once a year where you can hop on a plane or, you know, go to Carroll like last year, you know, where there's 500 people in a big hall and they get a chance to hear you talk about your team and meet you up close, get an autograph, get a picture, whatever. And I went to it last year in Carroll, and then I went to the one in Cedar Rapids. They only had three, but just a chance to, you know, just to see them up close. Fans were excited about that. But then afterwards, you know, Kirk stayed for 45 minutes or so and shook every hand, took every picture. Fran, I don't know if he had something to do or what, but left, you know, after about 10 minutes of that. Brands was out around 30 minutes. So, I mean, he was out shaking hands too. So there was this, you know, those are things that if you take them seriously, that it leads fans to remember you, you know, and granted that 3 years down the road, they'll say, hey, I remember me. I shook your hand at that, you know, and of course you don't, but you know, but still you build a connection and there's not a lot of connections.
Put a little booth or something with NIL swarm. Hey, join the swarm.
Yeah.
And if somebody gets to talk to Fran or Owen Freeman or Josh Dix or Peyton Sanford and have a really good conversation, they're going to be more likely to throw a few bucks in the collection plate.
Exactly. Because this is what, you know, this is what it does. Because the more you add to the swarm, the more money it goes to the players.
Yep.
And then the players feel better about it. You know, it's reciprocal. And I think right now, because so much has been taken away, Rob, and, you know, we used to go and kind of roll our eyes at the shirts and skins on Saturday mornings before, but there was
a photo of Ananobi from a shirts and skins. He visited that day. Yeah. Iowa didn't get him, obviously. He went to Indiana, but I remember some big time recruits coming to those shirts and skins games because now all that stuff's done in private where, you know, they'll bring kids in for football weekends, take them to Kinnick and all that, and they'll have them maybe at a practice in the practice facility. Those practices used to be out in the public where some of those recruits could mingle with the Iowa fans.
Exactly. And the other part is it allowed the Iowa fans to see them.
Yep.
And that, you know, yeah, some of them, it was really hot in there.
Hell in Carver, man.
It sucked, you know, at times. But, you know, it was an opportunity to get your product in front of fans, the PTL. And again, you know, the first time was always cool. Second time was like, yeah, this is all right. And then by week four, we're like, oh, let's get this thing over with. But still, for, you know, on Sunday afternoons or Wednesday nights or whatever, and you'd get, you know, 500-600 people in North Liberty, you know, watching these games. And then being able to understand. And then we write about them, but you're taking all of that away. Well, what are you replacing them with? Nothing. You know, granted, they get to have more workouts on campus, which they didn't get before, but, you know, at what cost? So that's where they're at. And, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about how to fix Iowa basketball. Now it has to fix itself. I mean, there's just nothing we can do to suggest it. And Fran to some extent has to come out and describe how he's not a lame duck coach. I mean, you know, his son's leaving.
What's
other son's not going to
go through, Scott?
28, I believe. Yeah, 28 or 29. So,
So a decision's going to have to be made there. You have to at least have that length that jives with the recruiting classes that you bring in. You don't want to bring in a kid that's going to potentially be here 4 years when the coach has 2 or 3 years on his contract.
Right, exactly. And then you don't think that's not going to be used against you if somebody's deciding between Iowa and take your pick out of any other Big Ten school that, look, his kid wanted to leave. You know, that's why he's at Butler. His other kid isn't even going to go there. How long do you think he's going to be there?
Yeah,
he's got to combat that, and he's got to combat it publicly because everybody can use it against him. And the fan base is unsure. You know, I mean, half the people thought he was going to leave after this year. You know, and is next year it? I mean, is he going to go wherever Jack goes? I mean, those are real questions. That's not speculation. So I think this is something that needs to be addressed very quickly, if not by Fran and certainly by the athletics department.
No doubt. And I know people are probably getting tired of hearing us talk about the same things, but we kind of try to workshop this and go through each week with the latest news and kind of reiterate some of our talking points and suggestions and things like that. And my guess is, Scott, we will be talking about more men's basketball here moving forward throughout the rest of the spring. But let's get to Monday night, and it was a show. Caitlin wore Prada. I'll take my wife and daughter's reviews saying it was fire. To me, she looked good. I like the sunglasses, yeah. Things like that. But Caitlin, the number one pick, then she gets introduced in Indianapolis yesterday, where there was some weirdness it seems like whenever there's a cool story, there's some weirdness or sideshow that takes over the conversation. And yesterday was a columnist from the Indianapolis Star, Greg Doyle, was a little strange. I'll let people search that. We don't need to spend a lot of time talking about that, but it's official. And I think the exhibition games start May 3rd, Scott. So I wrote this last week. It's cool for Caitlin Clark fans. They don't have to wait long to watch her again.
Yeah, right. It's crazy, isn't it? I mean, to think that the season just ended, and you imagine the Super Bowl is, you know, in February, and then all of a sudden at the end of February, it's the next season or something, you know. Just it's crazy the way this works out, or the national championship game, I should say. It's been a whirlwind. We've been living in the Caitlin Clark world for a long, long time. And in some ways it's kind of nice to, it's kind of moving on a little bit, you know. It's like, all right. Yeah. She wore Prada. And I will say this, that in some ways, I mean, first of all, I think this draft is going to be the one that ushers the WNBA into a major league status.
Yep.
Because when you look across the board, there are, you know, maybe it's because provincially we've paid attention to a lot of the players that maybe we wouldn't have if Iowa was just an average team or something, because we knew obviously who Angel Reese was and Camila Cardozo and you know, even, you know, Mule and all the others, Ilya Edwards. But they all have star power, and you know, obviously starting at the top with Caitlin Clark. She's the big draw, but you know, you're looking at Cameron Brink and think she could be a runway model. I mean,
she's already got an Adidas deal. She's in the Adidas commercial with a bunch of Adidas other men's basketball players that are sponsored by Adidas.
Yeah. Angel Reese. I mean, you know, the way they were dressed, I mean, it was kind of like the NFL draft, you know, where you look at them and the way they're dressed and at the ceremony. And I think with her and, you know, the ratings were just off the charts with like 300% increase year over year. And
it was it was like 400,000 last year. And this year was what, like 3 million.
Yeah. I mean, it was just unbelievable. But that's the Caitlin Clark effect.
Yep.
You know, that she, what she does matters. And I'd say this, that the coolest moment, of course, maybe provincially, is just that Kate Martin got drafted too. I mean, I didn't see that happening.
Nope.
And the fact she's going to the Aces, you know, the champions, the best team in the league by far, Megan Gustafson's there, Becky Hammond's the coach, and we all know and we all believe that Kate Martin's going to be a really good coach very, very quickly. That, oh, wow. So she gets to go, and even if she does make the roster, doesn't make the roster, it'd be great if she did. And then even if she didn't play much, just to learn from Becky Hammond, because she will have the opportunity to be that, to learn, you know, from a great coach. It was a win-win all the way across the board.
And speculation, I guess, that nothing's been finalized yet, that Caitlin has a Nike deal on the way for a signature shoe. And of course that created a poop storm too, because Asia Wilson does not have a signature shoe yet, and she's already the MVP of the WNBA. But
yeah,
I just don't understand. Do people understand marketing, Scott? I wonder sometimes. You know, I don't think we're telling people on this podcast anything they don't know, because they've seen the Caitlin Clark effect. But at some point, I mean, I think Dawn Staley gets it now. I don't think she got it earlier in the year when she was blocking a bunch of Iowa fans on Twitter. But she gets it now. She understands the Caitlin Clark effect, and she said as much yesterday, saying that Caitlin Clark is the reason, she is the reason why popularity is rising for women's basketball. Hopefully at some point this part of the dynamic chills Scott, and people are like, all right, hey, look at my bank account. I'm making a bunch more money. Thank you, Caitlin. And we get to that point instead of so-and-so doesn't have something that Caitlin has.
You know, one of my favorite movies, Rob, is Unforgiven. And at the very end, when the sheriff is laying there, he was talking about everything that he doesn't get a chance to do. And William Money just looks at him and says, deserves ain't got nothing to do with it. and that's what we're talking about with sports and in so many different ways. And this is another one, in a perfect world, Aja Wilson has more deals, financial deals, whether it's for marketing or what have you, South Carolina gets more headlines. Maybe they're the ones on SNL, but when you have a player that's a generational talent and the public responds to that person, then that's what drives people to the sport. And Caitlin Clark has set all the records. Twice she took Iowa to the championship game. We know the Caitlin Clark effect really well, and we've seen it in person. And then you look on the arenas on the road. That's really the true gauge of it. People here could be excited about her, but when you're going to Purdue and Northwestern and Rutgers and Albany, New York, and everywhere in between, and they're all sold out, and they're all thousands of fans, little girls. When Ohio State has 18,000 people show up for a game, and you got all of them screaming, "Caitlin, Caitlin, Caitlin," and wearing 22. That's what it's about. And if you could bring that energy and interest to the WNBA and elevate it from being kind of an afterthought. And I know a lot of people were really set off by her salary. And I'm also like, look, that's a league that's been a financial drain on NBA owners for a long time. It's they've lost money every year. People don't watch the games. But now that could change. That could be the Caitlin Clark effect for everybody, which is, what if they start to turn profits? What if people start attending all these games? What if the TV ratings go up to the point where they get a new great deal out of that? Then those salaries will move up, But, you can't just look at it for what it is today and say, well, it should be more. That's just not how economics works. But I think Caitlin's got an opportunity to bring her star to the WNBA, which she already has. We already have a cringeworthy moment, which I'm like, come on, man, you're making all, old white sports writers look bad by doing stuff like this. But
he's really good at his job.
I know he is too. He's fantastic. He's a great writer, and I really like what he does.
I think he may have just gotten caught up in the Caitlin Clark effect a little bit.
Yeah, he tried to do something that was kind of a shtick, and then got caught, and then oh this does not look good for being
cringy.
You hope that that's not used against him totally, but I've seen it get railed pretty good, so hopefully it's a learning experience and we don't make it a big statement. But overall though, Rob, we know what Caitlin's going to do for the next level. When the games are on, they're going to be well watched. They're going to dwarf Major League Baseball games, and we'll see what it means long term. But I still think it's got a chance to really take a couple steps forward and become, if not on the same level as some of the, the NBA or an NFL, but be in that conversation. Probably a lot like MLS, and this is probably like Messi going to the Miami franchise of MLS.
Story from about 3 hours ago, Scott, on Yahoo Sports. The headline is, tickets to Caitlin Clark's Indiana Fever debut more than double NBA playoff courtside seats. So, and those seats aren't cheap. So that gives you a little bit of an idea. And I saw some things, some reports yesterday. I'll throw some numbers out here. Indiana's July 14 game at Minnesota Lynx is the most expensive WNBA game ticket on the secondary market right now, according to the data from ticket site GameTime, with a median ticket price of $615. That's a regular season game again for Indiana, July 14th at Minnesota. That game narrowly beats the Fever's June 23rd away game at Chicago Sky, which is 600. May 24th at the Sparks, 583. June 7th at the Mystics in Washington, 530. So again, this is, I think we expected this, Scott, that this would just care, but the folks that are, she's losing money and it's the WNBA and nobody cares. Forget all that shit, because none of it's true.
Yeah, I know. We've tried to say it over and over again, you know, and I understand some, you know, a lot of fans who don't see the bigger picture. They see it as, well, I don't watch the WNBA, so therefore she should come back to Iowa. Well, that's narrow-minded. I mean, I've always said she will take her star to the next level, and that's what she has done. She will turn the WNBA into a big league, and that's what she's doing. Yep. Now it's up to the WNBA, cultivate that, make sure it matters, bring it along, you know, have the right people in charge, make sure that she's accessible and she's successful, make sure the other players don't take their jealousies out on her, and then everybody benefits. That's the thing that, you know, Iowa understood that.
Let me hit you with this. This is from the Forbes article that I've been reading from. I'm sorry, I should have cited that earlier. But this here it is. Here's for the, you know, Asia Wilson does not have a shoe deal yet. The prices that I've stated. First of all, the 10 most expensive games on the secondary market this year are Fever games, and it ranges from, these are road games, from 233 to 354, according to Game Time again. Those prices easily beat other teams in the league. For example, tickets for the Lynx home opener against the Seattle Storm range from 36 to 315, while the cheapest seats for the Aces home opener cost $8. So that gives you a little bit of an idea, kind of the range of what's going on here with ticket prices for the Caitlin Clark effect. Before we get out of here, Scott, we've run long here again, as we normally do. Let's talk about the young woman who will be coming in and taking over point guard duties at Iowa, and her name is Lucy Olson, out of the transfer portal from Villanova, was the nation's third leading scorer last year behind Caitlin Clark and Juju Watkins. You may have heard of those two players. Mm-hmm. She averaged 23.3 points per game last year for Villanova, was a first team all Big Ten pick, or Big East pick, after being a second team pick as a sophomore, and on the all freshman team. She also was an all American this past year. Great pickup for Iowa at a position of need. I don't know that they could have done much better, Scott.
Yeah, this is as good as it gets. And this is the after effects, and this is what they needed and what they wanted and they got. And that is an elite level scorer who now replaces Caitlin Clark, and you just plug her in. And this was a team that desperately needed somebody to come in and do this, because when you lose four guards, which is what they did, four starters, that they're going to need somebody to come in and kind of erase some of that. And I think Lucy Olson does that. The 23-3 a game, not quite the 3-point shooter that most of them are, at less than 30%. Hopefully that's something that, one of the coaches can kind of identify and work with her about, and maybe fix a little bit,
she needs to take the turnovers down a bit too, but yeah, those are hard, because sometimes we saw with Caitlin, sometimes the turnovers aren't specifically the guard's fault, but
yeah,
be that as it may, I think, but you know, I would expect her to be better next year than she was this year. So that's good, because she was really good.
Absolutely. Yeah. And this is what you expect, is that she was good for a decent team. the team that went to the WBIT finals and lost to Illinois. And I think one Illinois writer had mentioned that in that last game that some of the Illinois staff was like, we don't care what you guys do, just, or to one of their defenders, we don't care if you score, just make sure that you defend Lucy Olson. And that was, you know, that was part of it. And, you know, 5'9" guard and has, you know, she's the most improved player in a league that includes UConn. She struggled against UConn, but then again, you look at it, you know, UConn's a very, very good team, first of all.
And defensively, too.
Yeah, and they understand that, you know, that's the player that's going to hurt us, so they're going to over-defend her and make her work for her points. And, you know, but now what does that mean for Iowa? I mean, you have, you know, first you look at Hannah Stolke. Is she going to be more of a four or a five? I think you'd want her to get her to a four if you can get her there, because I think that's her more natural position. And you look at Sydney Alfalder, and she's going to be probably the equivalent of a three. You know, is Taylor McCabe going to step in and be your two? And then maybe Ava Hayden be your post. I mean, that's kind of what I would identify the lineup being right now, with, you know, Kylie Fuhrbach being a really good off the bench, you know, guard, and Addison O'Grady probably coming off the bench, but and then maybe one or two of the freshmen, you know, but I would love to have seen Aaliyah Guyton in that position, but you know, that an ACL is nothing to mess with, and not in this stage of her career.
No, so she had told me she hopes to be back on the, you know, full speed in November. So yeah, you figure she gets back full speed in November, you know, the period it's going to take her to get back into basketball condition and shape. Hopefully she's good to go by December. And, you know, she's in a position where she's healthy enough that you can use her as a rotational piece and not have to redshirt her.
Yeah. And then you look at some of the other players, you know, like Ava Hayden, for instance. She's at number 42, you know, recruit wise.
I wrote that she could have an Owen Freeman type impact. I think, yeah. I think she's that good.
Yeah. So you throw her at five and Hannah at four for the most part, you feel pretty good about that, you know. And then, you know, if Guyton could come back and give you minutes, you know, you've got Tegan Malegni. I'm going to screw up her name, but she's from Wisconsin. She's number 65 overall. Taylor Streamlow, who's also from Wisconsin, 94. And then you got Callie Levin, you know, from Solon. He was Miss Basketball. She's coming in. So you've got four top 100 recruits plus the state's Miss Basketball. I think you feel pretty good about that coming in, and where will kind of where they infuse into the offense. And then the next year, where right now you've got Addison Deal, who's committed. And so, you know, this is a heck of a stopgap having, you know, Lucy Olson. I think she's the player that you plug and play, and she's only there 1 year, and she does what you want her to do. And Iowa's a tournament team, you know?
Yeah, I think so. I think the talent is there for that. I've got them at 15 scholarships, Scott, at the max. Hopefully I've counted that up right, but that doesn't mean that they won't lose anybody still to open up one. You know, there are coming back. You have, as Scott mentioned, Taylor McCabe, Sydney Afalter, Fuhrbach, Kenise Johnson, and Ava Jones were both hurt this year. Obviously, we know Ava Jones' story. And I think Kenise Johnson had a significant injury. She was on crutches. It looked like it was some type of a repair. But then you also have Jada Jimfey, who I think can take a step forward. She's a nice, versatile forward that could maybe get into the rotation last year. A.J. Ettinger played some this past year, along with Addison O'Grady, so you got some depth in the post. Yeah, I think this will be an interesting roster, and interested to see how this team gels in the post-Caitlin era, because this is going to be it's an important year, because you know there's going to be a drop-off. There just is with what you lost. Those four starting guards that Scott talked about, you just don't want it to be a precipitous drop off. And you kind of want to, this is kind of like the first, not a rebuild, but kind of a reload to get us, as Scott said, with Addison Deal coming in next year, the five freshmen this year, to start to get it to rise again.
Yeah. Ideally, with this type of team, that you get to a point where you're competitive this year. You know, I would say if they can be in the top five or six in the Big Ten, get to the NCAA tournament, maybe winning a game, you know, maybe even two, but let's just, you know, keep it at the minimum. 20 wins, NCAA tournament, get a win in the NCAA tournament. I think that is really – that's a quality year based on everything, because based on losing the best player who's ever played and a WNBA pick in Kate Martin – And then all-time players like Marshall and Davis, who were so beloved.
Marshall was the best perimeter defender.
Yeah, right.
That's a key loss.
Yeah. And Molly Davis was a really good distributor and tough kid. And, you know, but I think the other thing is, you know, having Hannah Stolke come back, who I think she's going to be one of the better players in the Big Ten, if not the country, because you look at who she had to face in her last three games, Angel Reese and Anissa Morrow, and then facing Leah Edwards, and she dominated that matchup. And then at the end, you know, Camilla Cardoza and the rest of the South Carolina contingent. I mean, she held her own. She did well. And she did it as a four playing five. It's kind of like a wolf fighting a mountain lion, you know, and she was able to hold her own. And I think she'll be so much better for it. Cynthia Falter is like plug and play junkyard dog. She could play a four. She could play a two, whatever you want to get her in. The player I really want to see is Taylor McCabe, because I think she's shown a lot, but having Caitlin and everybody else, she just hasn't been able to you know, step through and be that consistent player. And she expressed to me, I talked to her on the side one day, you know, she was frustrated by not being able to play. She thought she would deserve that right. And I think she does. And so to me, if you have Lucy Olson and Taylor McCabe as your one and two, and then Cynthia Falter and Hannah Stolke, and, you know, whether it's Ava Hayden, and then you throw Kylie Fierbach as your really key player off the bench. And the only bench, you know, the only reason why is it's ceremonial who starts, you know, then I think that they are competitive. Are they the best? No. I mean, they're not going to be in USC with Juju Watkins and all them, but I think they're going to be competitive. And if they can do that, if they can be what they were 15 years ago, Rob, this year, with the cast they have, with the youngsters they have, that's as good as it gets.
Yep. And it'll be here before we know it, but we're not going to wish the basketball season here too quickly. We're going to, Scott and I are going to join May and June after the marathon that started in August and runs through Saturday spring practice at Kinnick Stadium. And we'll be back next week to talk about what we saw on Saturday at Kinnick. I'm sure we'll have more basketball discussion. Iowa baseball is home this weekend against Rutgers. Scuffling a little bit, the Hawkeyes need to get the ship righted. Got a win last night against Bradley. So if you're coming out Saturday to watch spring football, head over to Banks Field, catch a little baseball too. You can kill two birds with one stone there. I think it's still Obermueller, Marcus Morgan on Saturday, Brody Brecht on Sunday. So Iowa baseball home this weekend against Rutgers. Scott and I appreciate all of you folks for listening to the podcast. We especially appreciate our sponsors for helping us bring you this podcast free of charge. No Patreon, any of that stuff. And we'll be back next week to talk some more Hawkeyes. But until then, have a great weekend and have a good time if you're going out to Kinnick on Saturday. And we'll talk to you next week. Say goodbye, Scott.
Goodbye, Scott.